Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Owen Jones. Welcome to the podcast. The England football team took a stand against racism and in support of Black Lives Matter by taking the knee. They were booed by certain fans, racist ghouls, most of them, and the British government refused to condemn the booing of the English national side, legitimising the racist avalanche that was then directed against them when England narrowly lost in the Euro finals. Three black football players in particular who were targeted. Now, the English football team are the most courageously outspoken national men's team we've ever had. Why is that? Now, this is something I wanted to really talk about with two people who really know what they're talking about, two brilliant commentators, and that's Gary Young, who's had a massive impact on myself and a whole generation of progressive writers, really, and a brilliant young writer called Kemi Alamuru, who's from Manchester, like myself, who is the culture editor of Galdem, who you really must support, subscribe on social media and elsewhere. To talk about the significance of all of this, what this all really means, have they filled the vacuum left by the official opposition, which has kind of left the pitch, so to speak? Where do we go from here? You know, is this the beginning of a new impetus for anti-racism in this country? We've got a lot to talk about, and they're two brilliant voices, so I'm going to shut up now, other than to say, do support the podcast on patreon.com/OwenJones84. You keep the show on the road, you enable us to do the documentaries, which are so brilliantly put together by the team, in particular, as well as all the interviews and all the other things we do, including this podcast, or use the support function in the description. Please do leave us some stars and maybe even a review. Pourquoi pas? And with that, please listen to Kemi and Gary. So, Gary, we've got this national team with several black football players who become national heroes. And at the beginning of each match, they, of course, took the knee in support of Black Lives Matter, and were vilified by much of the right-wing media, and the government refused to condemn the booing that took place by certain English fans. What did all of that mean to you over this, I suppose, quite intense summer in lots of ways?
I mean, it was a very good example. Gareth Southgate, when you see Labour particularly talking about a progressive patriotism and all that kind of stuff, and here was a version of what it might look like that nobody has been able to articulate, because it took for them, ironically, given that they were taking a knee, to make a stand that kind of, yeah, we're English, whatever that means, because, you know, Scotland, Wales, England really only exists as a football team and a rugby team. but we're English, and this is one of the things it means to us. We're anti-racist and we're inclusive. And so, yeah, we're fine taking, you know, we're fine with the flag, we're fine with all that, but this is what it means. And so, you know, that you have to till that soil if you want anything good to grow in it. And so there was this, it enabled all sorts of people, including me, to really kind of engage with this and really root for them, because it had a meaning beyond itself, and it had a meaning beyond the kind of more banal and often very aggressive and reactionary nationalism that one would see associated with things like this. So it was a kind of masterclass, really, in what a what you have to do if you want people to engage with nationhood in a professional way. You can't just pull out a flag and say, we like this flag. If you're going to pull out a flag, you're like, this is what this means to us. This is what it doesn't mean. You're going to make enemies as well as friends. You're going to stake out some progressive ideological term. And I feel like that's what they did. And they did it in a very kind of unshowy way. I mean, they took the knee for like, it was like 5 seconds before a game. It was beautiful, I thought. But in each place, it took the debate from the sort of nonsense aggravation about critical race theory and all of that kind of divisive stuff that they were trying to do, and all these conversations or attempts to kind of smear people with the phrase white privilege and so on. It took it into your living room and said, the people who you will cheer, these are some of the values that they hold.
I think a lot of people have seen how players like Raheem Sterling have been treated in the press. A lot of people have seen how Marcus Rashford has acted over the last year and a half. How long has this pandemic been going on for? Seemingly ages, you know, trying to feed the kiddies. And for the team to collectively, you know, say that they wanted to take a knee, a gesture which is like super contentious right now, and then be hammered for it by their own fans and by the government and by the press, or certain sections of the press. Like, I think for me as a Black Brit, I kind of rated them for it and was like interested in the ethos behind the team, the things that they do on and off the pitch, like mattered to me in a way that like, maybe I haven't really paid too much attention to football before, other than in international tournaments, but this team just sort of had, you know, a nice camaraderie and a nice feeling behind them. So I was okay to be a bit footy mad for maybe like 2 weeks before I returned to just living the rest of my life. But I think like, yeah, I think Black Brits understand what they were up against, not just going into the tournament and the weight of it having been so long since we got this far before, but going into the tournament with not even like the full weight of your own fandom behind you, because you get booed before you actually start playing because of a choice that you've made.
When the football players were subjected to racist abuse, a huge racist pylon that followed England's very, very close loss, of course. And you saw Boris Johnson and Priti Patel, who had refused to condemn the booing, of course, of those English fans. And Tyrone Mings fought back. He said, if you set the fire, then you can't then pretend to object to the consequences. What do you think the significance of that was? You've got a national football team that unapologetically will fight back against the government on, you know, without holding back.
I mean, there were two things. First of all, the classiness of Marcus Rashford, who at 23 is so much more an impressive man than Boris Johnson will ever be already. The maturity and the humility with which they responded was deeply impressive to me, and the kind of, there were so many ways, there were so many kind of fault lines in the way that their missing of those penalties, which was a disappointment to them and to others. We shouldn't pretend like that was a thing that they intended. That kind of, no matter how excellent you are in your field, no matter how much you're paid, if you're Black, you're still going to face racism. The thing that my mum used to tell me, you have to be twice as good to get half as far that here they are. It's not just that they missed a penalty, that they were black people who missed a penalty. And the notion that, which is, you know, how racism works, that they missed the penalty because they were black. If a white person had missed a penalty, it was a bad kick. When a black person misses it for the racist, they missed it because they're black. And then the kind of notion that they're not just taking the penalty for England, they're kind of taking it for all black people. So in some way, their missing a penalty reflects on everything else about black people, like in the country. There are so many ways, the burden of representation, the need to be so much better just to kind of be average, the kind of racial signifying, it touched so many points for so many black people. And of course we know that had England won, it would have been understood as the genius of British multiculturalism and aren't we a fantastic nation and so on. So if we win, it's because Britain is brilliant and genius. And if we lose, it's because, you know, black people are awful and very disappointing. And so it speaks to so much of what is so wrong in the Britain's racial debate. And what we saw with Johnson and Patel and others was there's this tinder, right? There's this thing, British racism. There's also this thing, British anti-racism, which we've also seen kind of come to the fore as a response. There's this tinder lying around. And either you can put water on it, you can douse it, and you can say, you know, we are going to do everything we can to make sure that this does not turn into a conflagration and burn the house down. That's what Gareth Southgate did. That's what Gary Neville afterwards, and so many others. And then you've got Johnson and Patel, who others who were like, you know, having a little smoke right next to the tinder and then flicking their stubs on it and seeing where it lands. Incredibly reckless, but also actually kind of genuinely speaks to their worldview, in which kind of, you know, black people are pretty dispensable and race is not an issue of the lives of people in Britain and the way that Britain is kind of configured, but just a kind of leverage point from which to kind of position yourself in some kind of ridiculous and kind of canny way.
Well, first of all, I love Mings and I love that he pointed out the obvious. I think, like, you can't play stupid all of a sudden and say that you don't know where this racism is coming from, when the whole point of the fact that they were kneeling was because we have already established that there is a problem. And for Boris to say, you need to crawl back under the rock that you came from, I mean, I don't know. It just feels a little bit like, where have you been? Because we've been having conversations around race and how, you know, certain words that he himself has said has emboldened racists, like, you know, after his him comparing Muslim women to letterboxes, hate crimes jumped. So this is not his first rodeo. Priti Patel as overseeing the Home Office. I mean.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It just feels very disingenuous for them to just suddenly be like, oh my God, there's racism. Where's this coming from? Oh no. Like, you know where it's coming from. You know that you've tried to appease these views with your policies and with dog whistles when it suited you. So I just sort of, it feels a little bit like an insult to our intelligence. So I think Mings was just sort of saying the same thing, like, you didn't just get here yesterday. You know exactly what the situation is. You know exactly why we were kneeling in the first place. You knew who was booing us and why, and then you made them feel legitimate. And then that same mindset is what leads to, you know, emojis of monkeys and bananas being put on Saka's profile like 2 minutes after he missed the penalties. But, you know, at the same time, nobody can be shocked, but these aren't new issues. So yeah, I'm not really sure why they are changing their tune and playing dumb and feigning surprise.
How much do you think this is gonna galvanize the anti-racist movements of this country and beyond? Do you think this will have a lasting, galvanizing, mobilizing effect?
I think these things are like inflection points. They are kind of, you know, they're teachable moments. That this was a point at which everybody was, I think it was the kind of biggest viewing figures for anything. It's the furthest the England team have got in 55 years with these young men. And it ends up being this kind of awful racist kind of debacle when they miss the penalties. And so people aren't going to forget that in a hurry. And you know, these front page articles, splashes in the Sun and the Express, a lot of these papers who have stoked all of this racism, particularly anti-immigrant feeling and so on, but just anti-black feeling for so long that but then are forced to kind of, you know, talk about how awful it is and these are our boys and so on. And so it gives us a moment to reflect and to look at, you know, who was where and what. Now, where these moments go is, you know, what's interesting about this moment, I would say this to your viewers with all the energy in my heart, is that everything's in play. Everything's in play, that we don't know how this ends up. And it depends what we fight for, what we argue for, what we make the case for. You know, it could be that it's reduced in people's minds to racism is something that happens online with bad-mannered people and trolls who are just mean. Or it could be that we incorporate this into an understanding of what's been going on over the last, you know, year or so. And we understand it as part of a system that in many ways is both, it is endorsed from the highest levels, and that this isn't a one-off. It's not a glitch in the matrix. It's the matrix. So there's everything to fight for in this moment. What's clear is that we won't be going back to before. That whatever happens now, this is now part of this moment, is part of the national conversation. And it's not just the racist attacks, it's also the anti-racist response, which has been very impressive and genuine and kind of authentic. And you know, I'm old enough, Owen, I'm an old man, I'm 52. I remember when there weren't any black people playing for England. We've come a long way. We've come a long way to the captain wearing a LGBT supporting armband and the team taking a knee and Marcus Rashford making the statement that he did, and so on and forth. We've come a long way, and we didn't come there by happenstance. That was all about struggle, and that makes me hopeful, because it makes me think, well, where will we be in another 30 years?
I mean, we need to live in hope and optimism at all times, I think. Otherwise, we'll just drive ourselves mad. I think in any sense of the word, from an anti-racist point of view, from a left-wing point of view, from a human decency, equality point of view, without hope and optimism, things just feel pretty bleak, and progress is kind of impossible if you don't dare to dream. But I mean, I wasn't really looking to footballers to unshackle us from oppression. That wasn't really what I was looking for from them. But it's nice that they are showing solidarity with those sentiments, and it's nice to see that on a national stage, a huge stage, and maybe people who hadn't thought about it will have thought about it. And maybe they're on the fence. Maybe they're on the fence about taking a knee in Black Lives Matter, and they didn't know why it was really showing up in the game. But, you know, maybe now that they've seen what happens when three Black players miss a penalty, maybe they're starting to understand a little bit more why you would need to resist racism and to call attention to racism, sort of sound the alarm before they descend on your page, like when you don't perform in the way that they think that you should have performed for the team. Yeah, in terms of using this moment for hope and optimism, I think the reason why I wrote the article that I wrote was just because I feel like sometimes you need to seize upon opportunities to shift the narrative and change the narrative and to dominate the narrative, because I feel like the far right are very good at using moments for, you know, their own agenda. The whole run up to the tournament was like a really good illustration of like how they create mountains out of molehills and create, you know, conversations around wokeness and the culture war and blah, 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 blah. And that becomes so dominant and so loud. And we end up answering to that agenda rather than like sort of pushing our own forward. And I feel like, you know, when I woke up yesterday morning was when I wrote the piece, I just didn't want to start my day based on their agenda again. And, you know, talking again about how racism exists and talking again about, you know, these, you know, terrible, awful things. I kind of just wanted to shout out the courage of the boys, the achievements of the team. And yeah, I think over the next, you know, couple of days or weeks, we're already seeing with like the Marcus Rashford mural being like vandalized, that there are loud voices against racism, and there are many decent, right-thinking people out there. And sometimes it's, you know, good just to shout out the things that are good, just to, if anything, make you feel like you're not completely losing it. I think any person of color who was online yesterday probably just needed something to look at that contextualized the game with a bit more nuance than we were seeing overnight, when things just got very, very ugly very, very quickly.
How much do you think the fact that we have this uniquely outspoken national football team, which we haven't had in the same way at all before, as you say, not just on issues of racism, LGBTQ rights, and of course, in the case of Marcus Rashford, on issues of poverty, for example. I mean, how much do you think that isn't an accident, but it actually is because they're rooted, they're products of their generation, that this is a generation, unlike, you know, we talk about previous youth revolts. I often quote the fact that in 1983, most young people Thatcher won a lead amongst 18 to 24 year olds. That's changed a lot. There's a lot of evidence that shows this is a uniquely progressive generation. So do you think this is just a way, if you were, a kind of youth revolt, which is actually bubbling beneath the surface, finds different ways of bubbling to the top, and this is just one of them?
I mean, I definitely do think, and I've been thinking a lot about this, that they are definitely, they are products of their generation, much like Stormzy, for example, who, you know, Marcus Rashford's born in 1998 or thereabouts. So he comes of age at the beginning of austerity. In many ways, he's a victim of austerity, which is where he gets his kind of energy for all of this anti-poverty activism, maybe comes from. He will be in his mid-teens when Black Lives Matter really kicks off. He will only have known, well, not only, because things have happened since, but he would have been conscious at a time when there was a Black president in America. So a real sense of possibilities, but also a real sense of threat that he would have grown up during, you know, and been developing his consciousness during Brexit, during Trump, during some of the most kind of, you know, reactionary things that we've seen in a while. And so this group of young men, there was the notion of resistance. And I don't mean that they're getting up every morning and reading The Guardian and, you know, getting onto Substack and writing theories and calling Chomsky, but just the mood music that they have grown up with has been one of economic austerity, of popular resistance, of anti-racist resistance, of the notion of freedom in a range of ways, that people's individual choices, lesbian, gay, whatever, should not be impinged, and of a kind of hovering sort of sinister cruelty that's coming from government, in which their peers will have seen tuition fees being hiked and their ability to stay at sixth form curtailed with all of these cuts and so on. So I definitely feel that they are. There was something about Marcus Rashford's statement, the confidence in it, the self-assuredness, the, you know, I'm sorry that I missed the penalty. I am not sorry for who I am. I'm a Black man from Withenshaw and South Manchester, and, you know, if I have nothing else, I have that, which honestly, without wanting to be too hokey, has kind of reminds me a bit of the kind of things that Ali would say. You know, I don't have to be who you want me to be. I'm myself. I'm Black and I'm cocky. Those are, you know, that's not Rashford's style, but it's kind of basically what he's saying. So, no, I think that these young people, and we can see it in music. Lewis Hamilton's commission came out yesterday about racism in sports. We see it, like I said, we can see it in music. We can see it in some of the young Black politicians, and not just Black politicians, but some of the younger people coming through politics. That I was a generation, I was 10 when Thatcher came in. I was a generation raised in defeat. This is in not just electoral defeat, but a series of rowbacks and trade union rights and immigration and a range of other things. This is a generation that is raised both in austerity and in resistance and in a notion of a need to advance your sense of freedom and your sense of self.
Yeah, I feel like they are very much a reflection of the fact that there are conversations that we feel like we need to have and we feel like we need to keep having until everybody understands, like, they're using their platform and they're using their profile. And I think a lot of the conversations that we were having last summer during the waves of protest is just how can each of us individually make a difference from whatever job we're doing, whether you know are a footballer with a huge audience probably the biggest audience in the country, like, you know, on Sunday at that time. How do you use that moment to create a conversation and to like show your beliefs and like show like support for a cause that, I mean, people have said they're playing politics, but at the end of the day, them saying that Black Lives Matter is not really like a left-wing or a right-wing statement. It's just a statement of, you know, these people are equal. And this is a team full of Black players who, I mean, not full of Black players, but, you know, with a sizable amount of Black players who have faced racism in their lives, are dealing with oppressed, who seem to attack them for the smallest things, from buying them a house to, you know, getting a tattoo on their leg. And the boys are obviously just standing together to resist.
One of your colleagues at Gal Dem, a publication everyone should check out, once wrote that Keir Starmer is a wet wipe. And the reason I bring that up is, to what extent do you think a lot of this is filling the vacuum, because the official opposition has kind of vanished, just walked off the stage, doesn't really exist anymore. And therefore it falls to, e.g., football players to fill that void.
Yeah, Moya did write that. That was a very good piece. I've heard from someone who works at Labour that Keir really doesn't like that article as well. And he's like, I think he's quite sad about it. I think at this point, yeah, nobody's really looking at Keir to do any opposition, because like we'll be waiting a long time. And, you know, Marcus Rashford, for some reason, seems to be the only person that people think should be feeding the kids as well. Today, someone was tweeting like, at Marcus Rashford, we need your help again. And it's like, you know, we do have elected officials to fill these gaps. Like, these are actual people's jobs, like not just, you know, what this footballer does like on the side. But yeah, I think people just want to see an opposition to things that they can see aren't working well. There are many things that aren't working well, and the pandemic has shone a light on that. And I think people sort of grabbed on to the team and grabbed on to the ethos of the team, because like it just, they're saying things that make sense. Like they're doing things that make sense. They're saying things that make sense. It's not particularly controversial what they've said and done on the face of it on paper. It's just very, they're just making very normal statements about equality. And Mings is just pointing out historically what Priti Patel has said. Like, it's all quite common sense when you just look at what has been said without it being, you know, twisted or filtered through other various sources that have a very particular agenda.
I mean, you know, I think that these things would have happened if Corbyn were leader of the Labour Party, to be honest. I think the difference is that he would have voiced his support for them. And that some of them might have been more of a connection between what's going on in Parliament and what's going on outside of it. Whereas at the moment, the opposition within Parliament feels like it is not particularly relevant to what is going on elsewhere. I think they would have done it anyway. But I think that the way it would have been received and might have been amplified would have been different.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you found that as educational as I certainly did. Do support us on patreon.com/ownjoes84 to keep this podcast channel, every element of it really, going. And also use the support function, which you can see in the description. Please leave us some stars and a review or anything like that. Just helps get the word out, more people will listen. And with that, lots of love, speak to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news, ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.